the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Everybody, welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. I can't hear myself. There we go. That's much better. We are on the road again as The Drive coming to you from one of our favorite spots, and that is Franklin Tire and Auto. Everybody sitting here at this table has their vehicle served by Franklin.
Oh, yes.
Serviced
Many
by Franklin.
Times.
And, yes, they have. And they do a great job. That's how they've been able to stay in business for over a half century, over 40 of those years, right here at this location across from CC's. So we welcome you into the Monday Drive after a successful weekend for Auburn football. They did what they set out to do, and that was to work on the passing game. I thought they tackled much better.
Yeah.
Auburn comes away with a 42-3 win over Ball State. We'll talk about that. And another very interesting for a second weekend, there were some pretty interesting ball games, and there were some upsets. We'll talk about those as we head into it. We're here for the next couple of hours. We'd love for you to join us. If you can't make it out here to Franklin, give us a call on the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390. And that is sponsored by Skybards. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here on the Monday Drive from Franklin.
The lead singer of the supergroup, Brian Matthews, hanging out with us.
What?
Just getting done recording a podcast as you guys recap the first home win of the season for the Auburn Tigers. And I thought, look, it's about as close to that game, and we'll see what it looks like the game before the Iron Bowl. When Auburn plays another its final non-conference opponent of the season, but those games on paper going in look like they could be slam dunk contests for Auburn, opportunities to kind of score at will and work out what you need to work out defensively. And I thought for the most part Auburn did what you would hope a team would do in those games. And we've seen some situations this year where teams have sputtered and they haven't done what they need to do in those kind of games. And this early in the season, it would leave you pretty concerned about what you're going to see later on. But for Auburn, yeah, I don't know what you'd necessarily come away from the Ball State game concerned about, unless it was something that you were already
sacks. That'd be about the only thing
downfield
I can think
passing,
of.
Downfield passing, maybe?
Yeah, pass protection.
Well,
downfield.
wasn't because it was bad or you're concerned. They just didn't do it.
Right.
Really. But the biggest concern would be pass protection, because if you're going to throw the ball downfield, you're liable to have some more pressure on the quarterback.
Yes.
Probably too many situations in the first half, especially where Jackson Arnold was having to start improvising or getting away from the plan because the protection didn't hold up. You had that one drive sabotaged with the back-to-back sacks, but I also wonder how much Auburn sort of deliberately said, Jackson, don't
run
even in situation in situations where you have maybe he would have bailed out earlier. Those are instances where I would think it's sort of an opportunity for data collection for Auburn to last game, this game, are both chances to learn more about what this team can and can't do really well.
No, I agree. I think the downfield passing is a part of that for sure. When you have a receiver room like you do with guys like Cam Coleman and Malcolm Simmons and Eric Singleton and all those guys. You want to get the ball to them in one-on-one situations in space and let them do their thing. And I think that'll happen at some point this year. I just don't think Cam Coleman needs to spend this season catching 5, 6, 7 yard hitches.
Quick outs. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not what you signed Cam Coleman for. So I'm sure that stuff is coming, but also I feel like we need to see it here soon.
We'd love your thoughts. What did you think of the performance Saturday? What are you concerned about afterwards? But, again, it's a whole lot better situation than some other schools. Florida, my goodness.
Ooh,
the Gators.
Ouch.
I didn't think.
Shout out to one of our favorites at South Florida, Cody Burns.
Yeah,
shout out to KB there getting a big win.
Way
did you see the video, Bill, of the South Florida coaches
celebrating?
I did not.
No, I watched the end of it,
Ooh.
But I didn't see it after that.
And you understand why. You know what? We've seen South Florida celebrate before. Not a fun sight to see that in your home stadium.
No.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, they came back and an ugly loss for the Gators, who now go on the road for the next 2 weeks. They're in Baton Rouge Saturday.
They're the rest of the schedule.
Oh, it's brutal. It is brutal.
Yeah, they have 8 SEC games plus Miami and Florida State. Those are the next 10 games for Florida, and they start that stretch with a loss to USF.
Yeah. I mean that. I really do seriously wonder if Billy Napier is going to survive the season.
You know, I had written him off last year after September, and he had that miracle comeback there.
Yeah, they don't have the schedule they did last year.
No. At LSU, at Miami.
Texas, at Texas A&M. Georgia, at Ole Miss. Tennessee, Florida State.
Oh,
and then they've got Mississippi State and Kentucky as well.
I wonder if administrators at some of these schools that expect more than they've gotten –
Florida dang sure expects more.
I know. And I wonder if some of these administrators will use the schedule as an excuse to stand pat or give it one more year. Because I would think Florida would be an instance of that. The other one is, do you realize all 8 of Oklahoma's...
Yeah, their conference schedule, they're all ranked.
Every
conference game they play this year is right now a ranked team.
Oklahoma, they just beat Michigan, and they play 8 SEC teams, and right now all 8 of those SEC teams are in the top 25.
Well, there are 11 SEC teams ranked, including Auburn. Auburn ranked for the first time in 4 years.
I believe first time since Bo Nix was the quarterback, right?
That is
right. You go back to early November 2021, the last time Auburn found its way into the top 25. And you know, I love that, especially with the AP poll, like all the ballots are public and you can see. I mean, there are some voters already. Think about this, Bill. There are some voters who have seen enough now to put Auburn in their top 15. Like, Auburn's getting a handful of...
But they're getting mentioned in the playoff, talk.
I would say anybody you have in your top 15 right now is probably... By the way, also saw some people who left Florida in their top 15. So I wonder.
They must have missed the score. Maybe they were out of the country for the weekend.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's one that I don't. I think you don't want to overreact too much to 2 games. It's great to see Auburn back in the top 25. And if chalk holds this Saturday, you could have a gigantic game at 2:30.
Yep,
on ABC in Norman, Oklahoma, when Auburn goes and plays there.
Oh yes, that's going to be a big game. Back to what you're talking about with Napier, I think it has changed, right? Because first of all, you don't have to go undefeated or just lose one game or win the conference championship to be in the playoffs or have a chance to win a national championship, right?
No,
so that's changed.
No, you probably got a chance in this league.
Yeah,
you may well get in with 3 losses.
Yes, absolutely, and I think that's going to be. Stretched out even more as we move to the 9-game conference schedule.
Uh-huh.
And, maybe we get into the Big Ten SEC Challenge where you're playing another top Power 4 team every year. You're already doing that, but this would be even tougher, I think, if it's the SEC versus Big Ten. So that's coming. And, you look at Napier, buyout a little bit over $19 million at the end of this season. Half of that's due right away. The other half is paid out.
Oh, Bill Gators can come up with that.
Yeah. But it's not as easy now when you're asking those guys
when
also.
When you want that money for NIL.
And revenue sharing and everything else that's happening in college athletics. So it has changed a little bit about head coaches getting a little bit more time to get their program installed, to get their team going. I don't think there's going to be as quick a yank as there has been in the past.
Depends on how it looks against some of these other teams
on
the schedule, too. But you know what? He had a minefield of a schedule already, and to lose at home to South Florida is a setback, especially in a weekend where you went around the SEC and thought, hey, there's a difference between what a good team in the SEC looks like and what a good team from another league looks like. When Arizona State, last year's Big 12 champion, goes and – looks yeah. Somewhat pedestrian
yeah,
at the team that's supposed
Starkville.
To – Yeah, against the team.
Turned out to be a good game. Great comeback by State.
How is Vandy not ranked?
How is Vandy not in the top 25?
I mean, you've got 11 SEC teams that are ranked, but, you know – Vandy, South Carolina is South Carolina 10 now?
Yeah, because South
Carolina's 10?
Because
South
of where you started.
You know what? It's because Virginia Tech didn't beat a patsy week one. If right. Vandy had beaten a 1-0 Virginia Tech team, then maybe –
But they went to Blacksburg.
I know.
They went to Blacksburg and blew them out in the second half. Yeah. Absolutely blew them away.
And Pavia's numbers look unspectacular, but he's so important because the attention he gets mm-hmm. – opens up the running lanes for some of those guys at Vanderbilt, and it's a tough offense to defend. We've seen it now a couple of years in a row, the way that Pavia with a 4 or 5 yard run can really put that offense ahead of schedule, and you know he did enough to open things up, and they've got good players around him. It's not a one man show at Vanderbilt, and they it is to see them look. It's hard to argue they looked better in Blacksburg against Virginia Tech's defense than South Carolina did against that same defense on a neutral field a week earlier.
Absolutely. I mean, Vandy, put up the points and the yards in surprising numbers against Virginia Tech.
I'll tell you what, maybe injuries and lack of depth catch up to Vanderbilt later in the season. I would not want to play them in the next couple of weeks. I think that's a team that with everybody healthy and with mm-hmm. Pavia feeling confident – the next couple of teams on Vanderbilt's schedule, who do they have coming up?
They're at South Carolina. They're at South Carolina Saturday.
Oh, about it. Yeah.
There's where South Carolina's 10.
Watch out.
Vandy's not ranked.
Watch out.
Then Vandy's got Georgia State, Utah State before they go to Tuscaloosa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's a team that could get rolling and pick
they
up a little
South
bit
South Carolina. They very well are 5-0 going to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah. I'll tell you another watch out. As well as LSU's playing and as poorly as everybody thinks Florida is now, we've seen it in the SEC so many times.
Hey, this is desperation time. Back up against the wall.
Yep.
And this may be do or die for the Gators.
I think it's good for LSU that they didn't play well against La Tech.
I think you're right.
I think Brian Kelly is going to.
You know, they were looking ahead. But now some of those guys are going to be hearing, well, you don't have to worry about this week because LSU, because Florida sucks. They're going to hear that from their fan base.
They're being talked about as the best team in the SEC right now, the favorite for the national championship. Nussmeier Heisman Trophy. I mean, there's a lot of good things being said about them right now.
I think two things play in Kelly's favor there. One, the thought that they did not play well and they heard it from their own fans last week mm-hmm. maybe serves like as opposed to if they'd won 63-7 and they were coming in on cloud nine. The other thing, Florida won that game last year.
Yeah.
Like Florida
That's right.
Florida won that game, and I think Brian Kelly would have their attention thinking, hey, this is a team that beat you last year. Don't think that just because South Florida kicks a field goal and beats them, the things are a different way. I think this is – now, on the other hand, this would be for a boat that's already taken on water in Gainesville.
If they get their behinds beat in, that would not be good.
No, this would be – we've seen seasons go off the rails. Yeah. And this Florida team and this Florida season has a chance to go off the rails very quickly. And I think how they perform – and you look at this –
I know.
Schedule
and
is,
they were very, very uninspired against South Florida too, right?
No.
Oh, they absolutely.
I mean, the next time they play at home is October 4th, and it's Texas coming to town. We'll see what kind of season they've got at the end of that game.
I mean, they could be, that's not good. They could easily be 1-3, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, going to that game and then Texas. Yeah.
They could be 1-3.
1-3 with Texas and Texas A&M the next two games.
Yes, yeah. Woo. I mean, it's urgent early in the season for Billy Napier and company. That's what losing. You know what? Ask Tommy Tuberville. That's what losing at home to South Florida can do to your season very early. It can immediately change.
What year was that? Do you remember?
That was 2007. Cody Burns was on that team, a matter of fact, and now he's the co-offensive coordinator of the South Florida Bulls. And you talk about a coaching candidate on the rise. Golish was Heupel's right hand man at UCF and Tennessee. Now he's got a South Florida team winning at SEC teams. I would watch for his name mm-hmm. to be a potential.
Heck, Florida may not want him to leave town. They may have wanted to keep him there.
I forgot that game went overtime. I forgot that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
All right, we're just underway. Love for you to join us here on the Monday Drive as we come to you from Franklin Tire. Bill, Dan, Brian, Matthews. Again, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840. On the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors, and they also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian, Matthews, MauburnSports.com. Here at Franklin Tire, again, they can take care of whatever you need with your vehicle. I mean, from minor, regular service. We're sitting here across from, you know, just things you don't think about sometimes, like windshield wipers and, you know, things like that. But, I mean, if you have regular service needed, they're absolutely great for that. But, I mean, if there's something that comes up, if a light comes on that shouldn't be on.
Yeah.
If there's some noises that you don't think should be, bring it in. They can quickly diagnose it, let you know exactly what needs to be done, and then take care of it for you. Also, a great body shop. So, I mean, they can do it all.
24-hour wrecker service,
and,
too.
And you got nighttime drop-off as well here. I'm taking advantage, I think, of pretty much all those.
No, it's really important, especially, you know, this time of year. I've been told that this, you know, that September, the burr months, you know, your September, October, November, very important for your tires, because they just, you know, you just got done with summertime. You know, they just the temperature change is coming. You don't want to wait too long on something like that. And you're gonna need the heat. You're gonna need the heat working properly.
Yes.
Pretty soon. As crazy as it sounds, if you were out there, if you're out there Saturday, you're gonna need a. You're gonna need the heat going pretty soon. So Franklin, we're always happy to be here.
It's crazy. It was great for 2 or 3 weeks. Then it gets really humid Saturday, and now it's back to being
it's cool again.
Yeah,
perfect.
Now it's supposed to warm back up a little more by this weekend, but not be quite as hot as it was.
But
thank
goodness,
because we got an 11:45 game.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, the folks who had to be carried, to hydration on Saturday.
Oh, really?
No, I don't know. Okay. Assuming there's always a few, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like so you know, probably at the tailgates, you know what I mean? They were carried out for whatever reason.
I mean, just walking from the hay fields to the stadium was
an adventure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for the shuttles. I'm telling you. I mean, I'm still. There's no way I would have made it.
Yeah.
It would have taken me forever with the knee, which is getting better. Had rehab a little while ago.
No cane anymore, right?
No. I mean, now it's just trying to see if they can straighten it. Fellow today did a really good job working on trying to straighten it.
When are you gonna run your first 40? You gonna get back?
It's gonna be a while.
Oklahoma.
Well, it did say I could get in the pool now.
Okay.
Though. Now that it's cool.
Yeah.
And the pool temperature is probably 70.
The new knee won't rust or anything in the pool. It'll be
no.
All right.
No. Okay. Well, no, it's hopefully not. They had to make sure. They had to make sure that there weren't any leaks.
I think his knee is waterproof now.
Good,
or hopefully getting waterproof.
That's
but
good.
The and it's also we'll see if Bill can be ready for conference play. You know what I mean? That's the question.
Yeah, but that's right. We're just getting warmed up right now.
Yeah, we'll see if Bruce needs you in January or so. But no, it was a. Yeah, it was a. Oh, and you know what, Bill? I checked on the shuttle to the Gouge does drop you off. Pretty, the transit to the Gouge drops you at that intersection.
Yeah, it drops you across the street over there at the VCOM, I think.
Yeah. Right? So the first shuttle, which isn't so bad for us.
No, it's not. I mean,
you can get a
honestly, I did something I probably haven't done. You know, it's been you can count on one hand the times I've left a ball game before it's over. I just. I wasn't able to really prop the leg up, and you know, once it got to be 42, it was like, okay, I think we're okay.
I think it's a lot like sort of Damari's situation, where they just need to make sure you're ready for Georgia. You know what I mean? Oklahoma and Georgia. You know, they want to make sure you're ready.
Let's talk a little bit about the running back situation now.
Yep.
I mean, news today.
Yeah, interesting.
The first thing that he was talking about was Damari,
right?
Because he was asked about that
game time decision,
right? But that then led him to commenting on Darrell Robinson, who the last time we saw was running 54 yards for a touchdown.
Celebrating, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Star-crossed start to Darrell's career, right, because he had the – at Auburn.
Yeah.
Because he had the turf toe that sidelined him for some of the preseason. He was kind of playing catch-up for a lot of camp. Gets out there with Damari out and gets a couple of carries and gets to go full speed and breaks one for a long touchdown. And then we learn today that Sunday morning –
yep.
They discover a hematoma
on his thigh.
Yep. that required urgent
a trip to Birmingham.
Yeah, urgent medical. Yeah.
Well, when you've got a big, you know, a big bruise filled with blood that is much larger than you ever expected to see. Yeah, you better do something quickly and get into Birmingham.
Yeah, the family doctor doesn't get to fix that one. That one, it's urgent care, and apparently he's going to be out for some time.
Yes.
And all the best to Darrell, but just unfortunate because it seemed like especially without Damari, there could be opportunities in that backfield, and Auburn loved the experience they were getting from a Darrell Robinson, and with his absence. Would you expect
Jeremiah Cobb again? And then I think Omar Mabson will be in there. And then I think we'll see a chance to see more of Justin Jones, who's been a guy that's been around for a long time and is a pretty good running back. People don't take him I think people underestimate his ability. And then, of course, you've got the other freshman.
You got Alvin on the wall, on the scout team right now. And I think that if Hugh Freeze mentioned the possibility that that they might work him maybe less at scout team without Damari or Darrell, you might see him join the running back rotation and get some run this weekend potentially. Right. I mean, he mentions Alvin's name at the end of that answer, mm-hmm. so I would think it's a lot of Jeremiah and Omar.
Yeah. If you've got Damari as a game time decision, and you've got next week Oklahoma, then you've got Texas A&M, and then you've got Georgia, there's no reason, unless you're 100% on Damari, to play him.
Yeah, because Jeremiah, I mean, it was fun to see Jeremiah, you know, pop those two long runs,
yes.
Average 11 yards a carry. You know, then he goes 11 for 121 and two scores. So, I think you're still fine with Jeremiah Cobb and Omar Mabson. Let's see how South Alabama plays Auburn defensively as well.
I do wonder if it alters strategy at all, or if it's just a matter of – I mean, look, Jeremiah played pretty much the entire first half,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah,
you know, he played a lot
of the first three quarters.
As the only running back. So, I mean, I don't think they're necessarily committed to rotating them, you know, unless they like every option that they have. We'll see if that rotation includes if there's more – And by the time they were using some other running backs, Auburn had a pretty sizable lead,
right?
Too. So I mean, if you know, it depends on how the South Alabama game goes. But I wonder if Auburn could think that maybe you see Omar or Alvin or Justin earlier than you did. I still would.
Well, I think Omar's definitely the number two option, assuming that Nori doesn't play. And Freeze talked about how South Alabama likes to really mix things up and show different looks on defense, and how Omar's going to have to spend extra time on his pass protection this week to be ready for it.
Yeah, and I wonder what else Auburn does there. I mean, if it's more looks with no running backs on the field because you only have a handful of healthy ones. I mean, we've seen some of that. We've seen a willingness to go with four receivers and a tight end, and then run one of those guys out of the backfield with Jackson and run the offense that way.
Are the PB&J package with all three tight ends in there?
PB&J.
Quinte Johnson.
Which I believe, was it PB&J when Auburn throws to Singleton, or is it just two tight ends and two receivers?
I don't know.
Cam might have been on the – I should rewatch that. But I thought that was maybe – because that's been a part of Hugh Freeze. You know, it's classic Gus stuff.
Yes.
When you're willing to show – A heavy run package, and then run someone in motion and lob it to him.
If you miss classic Gus, go watch Florida State play, because that is all the hits are playing every week now. Yeah. And certain teams still can't stop them.
Yeah, they've done all right so far.
Yep.
One of a few teams that's put 70 plus up on the board, including one that we haven't talked about when we were talking about games this weekend. How about Tennessee hosting Georgia?
Interesting.
Saturday.
Yeah.
Tennessee has looked so good. Georgia has looked okay.
Right.
That makes me think, look out for Georgia to play well.
Me too, because I think Tennessee might be a little overrated, and Georgia, when people this version of Georgia with Kirby and as much talent as they bring in, when people start underestimating them, as I am a little bit, I'm not sure on their quarterback, they tend to come out and just smack somebody in the mouth. So we'll see.
That's a big test for really Gunnar Stockton on the road.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's where –
that's my biggest question there.
To me, that game, and I believe it's a field goal, the line right now.
Is that a night game?
That game is your 2:30 game.
Oh, okay.
On ABC this week. And that's a you guys can attest, when Tennessee thinks they're pretty good – and the fans pack that place,
mm-hmm.
that's not necessarily where you want a quarterback making road start number one of his.
Well, you're right. You're right about that.
Just be careful on the first throw, you know. Make sure it's a – you want to get that quarterback settled in there good.
I think it's going to maybe take more than one to get, you know, settle
well,
those folks.
Well, you don't remember what I'm talking about.
What's that a reference to?
That was – who was the backup quarterback who went to Tennessee on the first play through the pick six? This was the 90s, right? Yeah, I'll go back
okay.
there and look.
Yeah,
I'll
I was going to say, I did not get that reference.
Okay, all right. I'm so much an old-timer now, nobody gets my reference.
I was going to say, I've seen Auburn create some interceptions in Knoxville before, but I mean, it's I think that's a tough spot for Gunnar Stockton. I had the conversation with Doug earlier today with Tennessee, Alabama, and Auburn in – what is that then? Is that three of the next four for Georgia?
For Georgia, yes.
And Tennessee and Auburn are road games?
Yes.
Like that? That
Scott says Jeff Klein.
Jeff Klein,
okay,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, so we're talking like late 90s, yeah. right? Yeah.
Yep.
And so I mean.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that. I had forgotten that.
Yeah.
He's absolutely.
Yeah, well, it's one you want to forget,
I
right?
I know.
At least Scott knows my references. Thank
yeah,
you,
there
Scott.
We go.
Yes, we appreciate you. Yes, thank you. That was not a good game for Auburn.
Auburn's had a couple of those, but
wasn't also the game where the kicker gave Tubbs the finger? Am I remembering that correctly?
I was thinking maybe that was a Florida game.
You're probably right. You're probably right.
Being
a road game.
Yeah, 334-321-1390. That's the drive
maybe
hotline.
Scott remembers that one too.
I'd love for you to join in as we continue here with the Monday Drive from Franklin Tire.
11390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com coming to you from Franklin Tire here on this Monday. Love for you to join us. Give us your thoughts on anything from over the weekend. Again, we've mentioned 11 SEC teams ranked. Probably another one that should be in Vandy, but you know, I still feel like it's so early in the season. Their teams, I'm not really sure exactly what they have. We were talking about Georgia, Tennessee, and I don't know how good a defense Tennessee has played yet, but they've scored 117 points in two games.
Yeah.
On the other hand,
Syracuse just played a very close game with UConn over the weekend.
Yeah.
And won, but the coach was angry enough. Do you see this, Bill?
Yes,
no,
I did.
Fran Brown was disappointed enough with his team's effort. They were running wind sprints on the field post game after a win.
There you go.
Against UConn. So,
I mean,
it's
if he was really mad with that dude, had to do suicides or
he said he was talking about the he was like he said I have to smile through this post-game interview because we won, but I'm so angry
wow.
right now. It's sort of the way he described it, but this is a week. Certainly, you don't want to hit a pothole. I guess to use Franklin lingo.
Yeah.
You don't want to hit a pothole this week. But this is a week where, boy, there are some other teams in the SEC.
Yeah,
feel like
kidding.
They have bigger, more urgent
that the things are teetering. It's
yeah.
like okay, you know, there are a couple that you wonder. Wow, is this going to be a springboard? Are they really going to make that kind of move with Vandy? A situation there with Vandy at
right.
South Carolina, you know, all the talk and people laughing at Vandy. They go into Columbia and beat South Carolina to go 3-0, beat a knockoff a top 10 South Carolina. I think South Carolina is overrated. I don't think their team is the 10th best team in the country.
I think a lot of that's respect for the way they finished last year. You know, the 9-3.
Yeah.
You know, the 9-3
yeah.
finish and some of
where
the
they start,
up.
You win, you just keep moving up.
But no, I think that it's they are They're vulnerable. Yeah, and I think Vanderbilt going in there with nothing to lose and less than a touchdown underdog. Like, I think that game could be. That game's real interesting. Tennessee, Georgia, we were talking about earlier. Yeah. That game's real interesting. Yeah. How about this? What's going to happen when Arkansas goes to Oxford? Is Arkansas going to get destroyed? Is Ole Miss? I don't know.
It seems like Ole Miss loses one of these games every year, right?
It really does.
That Ole Miss.
So does Auburn, unfortunately.
I didn't have the guts to take it in the pick'em, but that Ole Miss Kentucky line smelled like rotten eggs all week.
Yeah, it did.
Because why wasn't Ole Miss a 17-point favorite or a 21-point favorite? Well, Kentucky's offense.
And you know, it's crazy. All right, when you looked at it, it was like 10.5.
Yeah.
When it went off at the game, did you see what it was?
It was an 8.
Yeah.
And
what does Kentucky do?
Yeah.
Mark Stoop kicks a field goal with 8 seconds to go to cut it from 10 to 7.
Makes it a one-possession game.
Yeah. It makes it a one-possession game, but it also covers for everybody that took Kentucky in the points.
I believe it also.
I don't know if it's going to make Kentucky fans feel a whole hell of a lot better.
Some of them will. I think it also hit the over on that.
Oh,
I think
is that, right?
I think that kick also hit the over.
I didn't even notice that.
So it's like, I mean, if you ever needed a PSA – for not gambling.
Yeah, so Stoop's going, yeah, okay, look, I helped save us money.
Not gambling on college football.
I'm still your coach.
It's the thought that Mark Stoops would kick a field goal to hit Kentucky in the
Where
over.
Were they? I mean, I wasn't watching. I just saw that score as we were going along, and I thought, man, that's a pretty crappy thing to do just to beat the spread.
Let's get to Clay on the phone while I research that.
All right, hey, Clay.
Hey, Bill. How y'all this afternoon?
Doing pretty good.
Man, how good did Xavier Atkins look Friday or Saturday evening?
He really can run, yep. Can he? I mean,
we've heard that since he
can deliver a pop as well.
Yes,
he's not the biggest guy at linebacker, Brian, but I mean, he gets there with some suddenness.
He does. You know, Auburn's had a long list of those undersized, fast, quick linebackers that play real physical. And he, to me, might be at the top of the list because he not only does all those things, when he hits somebody, they stop, mm-hmm. right? He just has that.
Yeah.
He really brings that pop to it. I love watching him play. He's been terrific. To me, he looks like a special player for Auburn in that defense. I just what an incredible pickup they made in the portal getting him. He's just a sophomore, right?
I am really impressed with all the guys that Auburn added in the portal. I'm trying to think of somebody that's disappointed. As a matter of fact, a lot of them have been better than we thought they would be when they came in.
Yeah, I'd like to see more production out of right tackle, for sure.
True.
How much are you seeing? But you're seeing Hardy a lot. Ash, maybe.
Not as much, but Dallas Walker.
Dallas Walker is playing
a good bit. Xavier Atkins.
You're seeing Chris Murray?
Chris Murray.
Chris Murray's playing.
I mean, Pleasant and Strader. I mean, it was a good – it looks like it was a good crop from the transfer portal.
Well, you definitely see a difference in the way Auburn is going after the portal and signing kids now compared to the first couple of years.
Well, and being there in person, you get to see the whole feel on every play, and you're not forced by the camera angle to just watch the ball. I was watching Eric Singleton, and we all knew how good he was, but that cat, and I'm not saying he's as good as this comparison I'm going to make, but I was talking to someone this morning, and we were trying to figure out a comparison. He reminds me of Jaylen Waddle because he does not do any – he does not ever make a move that's not intentional. And he can run sideways just as fast as he can run north and south.
I thought Devontae Smith did that better than Jaylen Waddle. I see what you're saying.
Jaylen Waddle just ran by you. I'm still scarred by the touchdown return, buddy boy. There's some things that get seared in your mind, but he's so intentional, and I'm considering the source, but on that fake jet sweep wheel route deal, it almost to me from my vantage point where I was sitting, it looked like it was a Canadian football league where, you know, you can take, 15 steps and be running wide open when you hit the line of scrimmage. he doesn't lose any speed. Mm-hmm. And the safety tried to get to him. He had no chance. So we didn't see his hands. You know, he didn't make any magnificent plays. But his speed, he was so fast on that little wide receiver screen. Connor Lee was out there, and Connor looked like he was mad because he didn't even have anybody to block because he had run by everybody by the time he scored.
No, he is, and I noticed that with some of that with Malcolm last year too. Like some of these guys that Hugh Freeze has gone and gotten, I mean, when they go in motion, it's a different gear, and that can really, we've seen, you know, that was a plan going into last season. I think after a couple of games, especially when they made the quarterback swap and then put Peyton back out there, you didn't see as much motion with the offense. I think that was one of their attempts to sort of simplify things later in the season when. And I know that can be taxing on receivers too, knowing where you're supposed to be, knowing all these things. I think communication with the receivers was a problem last year at times, being lined up where you need to be and running the right play. What you've seen from these guys, I know it hasn't overwhelmed because you know Auburn ran the ball so much against Baylor, and Ball State's Ball State. I think they've been pretty happy with what they've gotten from the receivers through two games so far. And that might have been – look, Cam's showing you a lot of different things he can do in that Ball State game, and he's showing you a little bit of the yards after the catch potential, which you didn't see much at all from Cam in his first year on campus. You didn't see that, his ability to make plays after the catch with the ball in his hands. That's something I think you see more of this year, and you saw a little bit of it against Ball State.
I would just like to see have three guys automatically, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and even going back to the wheel route, and again, I will reemphasize, I do understand the competition we're playing against, but how many times over the last 5 or 6 years have you seen that player be wide, you know what, open, and it was underthrown or it was thrown over his head, and the crowd goes, oh! and it was just nice to see that be thrown on time. And it's like, it was perfect. The new light is also, and I love laser light, so.
Anyhow,
you did?
We're losing.
Sounds like we're losing Clay.
I wrote about this in my column. I just thought the atmosphere was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, really, shout out to the crowd. You would have thought Auburn was playing Oklahoma. Yeah. I mean, yeah. it was. I mean, they were there and they were loud. They were ready. I mean, it wasn't the most comfortable night you've ever had, and I mean, the crowd was really into it, and I thought they stuck around pretty good. I mean, considering the way the ball game was going,
and there are some other spots in college football where that's a storyline right now.
Yeah,
hey, where were the fans? You know, even in a game where it's not a marquee opponent, it's early enough in the season. We're in the top 25. You know, what's with the big? I think Penn State. You know, folks were sort of alarmed, like where you know big chunks open seating. USC Stadium was empty when they played Georgia Southern. That's a former coach coming back to play them. I know it's a Sun Belt team, but Athens.
I know
there were some folks in Athens, you know, sort of lamenting that crowd wasn't. And we'll see what it looks like for Auburn this Saturday.
At some places where they've won and won a lot, you tend to get that. You know, it's not a big ball game. We don't have to either be there or be as into it kind of thing.
Oh, I would think this Saturday is the biggest test for Auburn in that regard, right? Because it's the game between – I mean, so many people were in town this past weekend. It is, you know, your last home game until Georgia. But between the kickoff time and the opponent, I wonder if this is a game that some Auburn fans decide, hey, you know, maybe it's easier to catch a new
11:45 game. Yes,
I still expect Jordan Hare Stadium to be, everything they say it is in that fourth quarter video.
Yeah.
Right. Everything that they everything they hype it up to be when they get things rocking. Although they probably won't go night mode.
it wouldn't have the same effect.
Duck mode will be tougher to do
it. That's like, oh, what's that? I mean, yeah. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour. I would love your thoughts. I mean, if you were there on Saturday night and there was a great crowd there, love your thoughts on the atmosphere, the, you know, everything. What did you notice and how did you feel about it? As well as, obviously, thoughts on the ball game as the Tigers get ready for South Alabama coming up this Saturday morning. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive from Franklin Tire.
The Drive
on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Drive. Final segment of hour number one. Bill, Dan, and Brian here at Franklin Tire, where, again, they can take care of anything you need seen about with your vehicle.
Urgent piece of business from the last segment, Bill. It was a 38-yard field goal by Kentucky.
They were around the 20-yard line.
Yeah,
so,
they're around the.
Okay, I guess I can see. Golly, though, man! If they were anywhere near that before they were down to the last 10 seconds,
they had just hit a long pass.
Okay, that got them. I can understand that. Then that's really your only shot.
It's field.
Your only shot is to kick that field goal. Hope you get an onside kick and hit a Hail Mary.
Because you're going to need two scores anyway. Yeah. I mean, you can try to go touchdown, onside kick, touchdown, but you're probably not leaving yourself very much time after the onside kick. And it just so happened to cover the spread, right? And we were joking last week about what percentage of that action was probably on Ole Miss at just 10 points, 9 points, and then it moves in Kentucky's favor, and then they still end up covering it. So that's one where that is – you want to know why they're building casinos and not – tearing them down.
Yeah.
Taking the lights out of them.
Yeah. Because they're not losing money.
Games like that.
No. All right. I just got a text just wanting the full injury update from Hugh Freeze today, Brian.
All right. So Towns Magoo injured his ankle on that field goal thing. I think he caught a little bit of the turf.
Yeah,
with
that's what it sounded like.
But it sounds like he's ready to go, or it's not, you know, too serious.
Also sounds like Hugh Freeze was pretty pleased with the job Gibbsy did breaking.
Well, you had to be. I mean, he was kicking the ball nearly out of the back of the end zone on kickoffs.
I wonder if they would have let him attempt a long field goal with the way he was kicking it on Saturday night. I wonder if after, you know, if something –
he might have been, yeah.
Like, I wonder if the plan, especially without knowing if Towns – if he's 100% this Saturday, I wonder if the plan could be Big Mac, 35 and in.
Yeah, I could see that.
And maybe Gibbsy for anything, 35 and out. And then and then maybe you punt if it's beyond 50.
Yeah.
You know something like that. Like I think that could be the shot. And Connor Gibbs has kicked field goals.
Yeah,
in the past in his.
He didn't kick a lot. He was mainly a kickoff guy at Southern.
Yeah, and then Damari Austin will be a game time decision. For South Alabama, to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense unless he's 100%.
Oh, man, have him be as healthy as possible for Oklahoma.
With what's coming up.
Went through the – and I think Hugh Freeze did say it was a walkthrough before practice today. You know, they want him to practice with pads on before they go with him.
But to me, a shoulder is something that's fairly easy as a running back to get banged up again. You know, I know it could happen any time, but still.
And I think opportunities to rest Damari, even though you would have loved for Damari to have this overwhelming statistical senior year.
Yeah,
I think that opportunities where you don't have Damari, who you maybe kind of – you know what you have, and you like what you have.
Right.
But when it comes to Omar or Alvin or – well, it's not going to be Darrell, but with even Jeremiah, I think maybe opportunities to see what you've got in different situations.
Even though he was in the ball game an awful lot, he only had 11 carries.
Yep.
So it's you know, it's not like – yeah, you were overusing him.
No, I think
I think the most concerning one is Darrell Robinson.
Oh, yeah.
Did not know that he was injured during the game, but the next day, Sunday morning, had that, as you call it, hematoma in his thigh. They had to rush him to Birmingham, according to Coach Freeze.
Hematoma is not the – Hugh Freeze described it as like a big –
think of it as a giant – think of it as a giant blood blister.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you ever had anything like that? You ever, you know, pinched a finger or a toe or something, had a – just imagine something massive on your thigh.
But had to take it drained, and he'll be out for, I think he said, extended period or something similar. So Auburn a little bit thin at running back going into the USA game.
Yep. So look for a good bit more, I would think, from Omar Mapson.
Yep, definitely.
It sounds like DeMar had a pretty nightmarish day yesterday. So all the thing, all you know what I mean between
Durrell?
Yeah, Durrell. It sounds like Durrell. I mean, taking a giant blood blister.
Ride
to Birmingham.
Just to be able to look down and not see it there anymore, though, would be great.
Yeah, hopefully he's okay. And I would think, you know, if Hugh Freeze mentions him, it hasn't necessarily been health lately with Alvin. It's been
It's just learning. Making that transition from high school.
And he's a scout team option, so I would think maybe they pull him off the scout team and go with one of the other running back options there.
I mean, if you're going to redshirt Alvin, he can play in several games this year, so why not? Why not this one?
You know what? He's a guy – you know what? If he breaks in, if he's one of your three best options for more than a week, we'll see. But I wonder if he even could shed the redshirt.
Depending on how much they
need him.
You know, I think for him, coming from a small school, it's just been an adjustment to all of those things that a college tailback is asked to do. Where Omar came from a 7A program, already coached up like that, it's just two different things. It's, you know, Alvin's just on a different learning curve there. So maybe with this opportunity, but my guess is he's probably going to take a little bit more time to really be a feature back in this offense.
All right, we're coming up on – yeah, there it is. Yep. You were coming up on our top of the hour break.
Didn't want to sell you short, Brett. Hang on, and we'll get you. We'll give you as much time.
Yeah,
you'll
get things started when we come back for hour number two of the Monday Drive from Franklin Tire.
This is Ray Hornsby at Affordable Comfort Cooling.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive as we come to you from Franklin Tire and Auto here on East University Drive, right across from CC's Pizza. Love to hear from you. I mean, I can understand. You may not just want to pop in, but if you're in the area, we'd love to see you. But got to keep Franklin on that. I've got the number memorized, but I'd say keep them in mind for anything that you need seen about with your vehicle, from just regular service to from minor to major. They can take care of it here at Franklin Tire. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here at Franklin. We'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. And Brett has been hanging on since the end of hour number one. Hey, Brett, thanks for holding, man.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, guys. I'm sure y'all have heard it all, and I'm just a fan, so I'm somebody who can look ahead, but I hear Auburn's playing the national championship favorite in 2 weeks, according to what the press are saying about Oklahoma.
And the Heisman Trophy candidate, leading candidate too, according to Sarah.
I think that's a nice win for them. It avoids the urgency that a loss would have created for Venables. I mean, I still don't think he's in position to lose to his former quarterback and have sell everything that's hunky dory for Oklahoma. But I think it's being able to win that game, hard to believe. First ever regular season meeting between Michigan and Oklahoma, when those are two of the five winningest programs in the history of the sport. And I think, I think it's a nice – again, it avoids the pothole, right, that a loss and a bad performance by Mateer would have created. But I'm not I want to see them beat a couple of SEC teams before I go crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's certainly a good win. Anytime you beat Michigan, that's a good win. But come on, I mean, Michigan's offense.
Michigan was just good last year,
right? And their offense is just—I mean, I know that quarterback
was bad this year. It's bad.
He's just a true freshman on the road, you know, and doesn't have a lot of great pieces around him.
Well, not only that, Brian, he had started one whole college football game going on the road. He has one receiver, and they had scored a whopping 34 against New Mexico. I think we can remember who led a team to 45 points in 2.5 quarters against New Mexico last year. I mean, big-time Hank Brown threw it on them like there was no tomorrow.
Yeah, that's the guy. I'd already forgotten about that, but thank you for reminding me. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Have y'all seen any of the clips online about how Oklahoma, you know, they're real aggressive and all this, how they ended up defending Michigan?
I have not seen those clips.
No, I have not.
They were sending seven people. If the running back was out to the right, they were slanting seven people to the left side of Michigan's offense, leaving four wideouts single covered all over the field.
That's how much they didn't respect their receivers.
Yeah, and I know Michigan receiver is, you know, as much as they've invested in Bryce, you know, Michigan's, you know, that's not a strength of that team.
No.
Can't imagine that's the plan when you start facing some teams with quarterbacks that aren't making career start number one on the road or a team with some game breakers at wide receiver.
Well, Dan, not only that, but Michigan's quarterback, I mean, this is 2025, he is no threat to run. He had three runs from scrimmage, and that's including scrambles the whole game. So he wasn't going to be pulling it, you know, and Auburn, I'm not saying they're going to win, but I think Auburn's got a great shot at beating them. I mean, Oklahoma cannot run the ball. This wasn't the first game they couldn't run the ball. They didn't run the ball against whoever it was, Southern Illinois Institute of the Four or whoever they played. They were under 4 yards a carry that game. So,
some of the best plays they make on the ground are with Mateer. You're right, which is a tough thing to sustain.
Well, I'm not saying Mateer is going to run on just about anybody. He's just a great athlete.
He can throw
the ball, but I don't see him, you know, running for 120 yards against Auburn or anything like that. I mean, you know, I'm sure he'll complete some passes, but
I think Oklahoma would feel better about their chances in that game. If you said Mateer is gonna be able to make, because that's how a defense, you know, considering the point you just made, I think that's how a defense is gonna find themselves off balance against Oklahoma's offense, is when you start having to really account for what John Mateer can do on the ground as a runner, or if they can start getting, because Ott's given them nothing through two games, right?
No.
Like they've gotten pretty much nothing from the Cal tailback that we know is pretty good from facing him a couple of.
So that makes you wonder about their offensive line a little bit.
Yeah. Well, hey, last thing, even if Auburn were to lose to Oklahoma and A&M, Auburn's beating Georgia this year. That's Joe Willie Namath guarantee of the year, Dan.
I'm with you on that. I was thinking about, you know, the rest of the schedule or the first six games.
Right.
I could see that happening. I absolutely could.
It's going to happen, guys.
And I think the bye week's
exactly where you want it.
Oh, yes, it is.
And Jordan Hare is such a difference maker, especially when the atmosphere is like it was against Ball State of all teams and like it will be against Georgia once we get out.
Now, if Georgia goes to Tennessee and boat races the Vols on Saturday.
Doesn't matter.
Me. You don't think that changes? Okay.
No.
All right.
It's time.
I think if they go to Tennessee and they're clearly a cut above that team, I would say they're still probably looking like the best team in the conference.
They'll still have Alabama coming in.
They'll still have
two weeks before they come here.
They'll still have Alabama as well. Yeah, I think Georgia winning. Tell you what, Georgia winning, Tennessee, Alabama, and Auburn beating Tennessee.
Oh. They're the best team in the league, period.
They're probably and maybe America. And like if Georgia's undefeated when the Auburn game's over.
With that quarterback
and this schedule. Yeah. Tennessee in Knoxville this Saturday, Alabama in Athens a week later, and then Kentucky, and then going to Jordan-Hare facing Auburn off a bye week.
Yeah.
If Georgia's undefeated when the Auburn game's over, that's tough to vote them anywhere but.
Oh yeah.
One. I don't know if they're going to be.
I'm with them though on that game. Yeah. I really am. We are looking ahead, but if things don't go well for Auburn on the road at Oklahoma or A&M, don't think that they can't come back a couple weeks later and beat Georgia at home.
Well, it was two years ago that things didn't go well for Auburn at all at A&M, and they came back a week later and played Georgia extremely close. Remember that was a game where Carson Beck was on the road. The fourth quarter
killed him that game.
Yeah, but it was, I mean, Carson Beck and
you
Brock
don't bring
Bowers.
19th. 19 doesn't come in the game.
Yeah.
Auburn wins.
Yeah. I mean, you have Yeah. I mean, that is a very, very tough one. But it was just a week after a really frustrating performance by Auburn. You're right. I mean, this team, I think now you feel like you've got a better shot of winning some of those road games.
Yes.
And you've always thought that at home you've got a pretty good chance of taking care of business.
Yes.
Great stuff, Brett.
334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Love to hear from you, your thoughts on this past weekend. And now 2 weeks in, your thoughts on how things are shaping up. Still, I mean, a lot to be proven by a lot of teams. There's no question about that. And, after week one, you had some crazy first impressions that may have changed a little bit after week two. But I would say, Brian, that after 2 weeks, there's nothing to be overly concerned about with Auburn. I mean, they are playing better.
Yeah.
And they seem to be headed in the right direction.
Yeah. And, if you look at their schedule, Missouri may be better than people think. So that's something
maybe
to keep an eye on.
Yeah,
second half of the season, right? And, we talked about Georgia a little bit already. We just don't know what to expect from them, and their quarterback. I'm trying to think who else. Vanderbilt, no surprise there. They look
Vandy
good
is pretty
again.
Good.
Yeah.
I mean, areas of concern, even considering the opposition from this Auburn team, I think that your margins are thin enough in some of these games coming up.
Maybe still a little you want to see more from the safety spot.
I was going to say
against the pass.
I was going to say, although we do have a point to make about that, because I thought Hugh Freeze had a really interesting answer to my Sylvester Smith question today at the press conference. But
right.
I'm thinking it's field goal kicking. Is a spot where it's like you're gonna need
that's right.
You need reliable.
There's gonna be a tight game where you're gonna have to make a big field goal.
I mean, you cannot come out of that game and not be worried about your pass block and then your pass downfield passing, all that stuff working together against a talented defense, especially going on the road against a talented defense. So, to me, that's the biggest concern, right? Because Oklahoma is the type of team that is going to pressure Auburn.
Oh, they are.
It's going
to. Tier is going to throw the ball downfield.
Right. And he's going to
threaten you on the corners as
they're
well.
They're going to try to take away the run and force Auburn to beat them with the pass, give those one-on-one opportunities to Auburn. Can they protect the quarterback? Can they make the plays?
That's what Dave Aranda said he was going to do. It's exactly what Dave Aranda said he was going to do, and it's not what happened. So I do think, I mean, forcing – one would think, just like we said with Peyton Thorne for a couple years, force Auburn to show you they can beat you downfield and back off your run get your run pressure. And if they can do that, then it's game on. If they can't, then the quarterback's going to be under fire all night long, and you're not really going to have much of anything. But, no, I think the field goal kicking – Bill, you mentioned the safety play. We were naming some guys last week, Caleb, Robinson. There were some players in the secondary, and I think people watching, even people in the stadium, were like, oh, they're having tough games. And Hugh Freeze was talking about missed assignments today, and he was talking
about the guys in front of him.
And he singled out Sylvester as a guy who had a bunch of missed assignments against Baylor.
Right.
And then Sylvester Smith was challenged by this coaching staff to provide more in so many different ways.
More as a player and as a leader.
Because Champ Anthony's gone too.
Right.
And so they need that effect. And Sylvester's played – I mean, you think about the guy, the options inside and at safety. Sylvester and Caleb have probably played as much at Auburn as any of them. And even so, you're talking about a –
those guys have really only played a year,
and they've really only played a year.
So Jacquez started against Ball State.
Yeah,
Eric Winters played a whole bunch against Ball State.
Yes,
and
he did.
We saw new boy Fagans in there. I don't know.
He played a decent amount. He played a decent amount. Yeah. I saw that 25 and 21 combo out there a good bit.
I mean, I feel like Harris and Smith are going to be, and we'll see how much Jacquez can work his way into that group as well. Harris and Smith are going to be out there a lot, and the hope would be that Champ Anthony can return sooner rather than later, and it sounds like they're optimistic about, and I wouldn't bet against that guy. He worked too hard to come back from that injury last year. Champ could come back with the send Eric Marks
he's fearless. He will play with that and be very effective with it.
I think you could see I'm
counting on him for Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I expect him to play it.
Yeah, and it's about figuring out who else. But, I mean, honestly, Caleb, Champ, and Sylvester as your core three at safety and star, with what you've seen from them in the past in their Auburn careers at different points and the thought that these are still young players getting better, And then there's still room for freshmen to break in as well. But those three guys, and, you know, it is striking, too. We're not talking about Kane and Jay Crawford at all, right? Like, for all of –
no.
For, I mean
– Well, they haven't really been – they really haven't been tested.
Isn't that a good feeling?
This other teams are thus far going, let's avoid those guys.
There are a lot of teams in college football where these conversations are starting with outside corner and not having got Auburn's done this before.
I think we'll see about South on Saturday, but Oklahoma's going to test them.
Yeah.
I mean, at least one of them. Oklahoma's not going to
– And one thing Mateer does really well is buy extra time with those legs and keeps his eyes downfield and finds those receivers coming open late. So that will be a big thing they'll have to work on defensively.
Fair to wonder, though, how often he's faced a front four or front seven.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
That can put pressure on him and chase him down. How many Amaris Williamses or Keldrick Faulk or Keyron Crawford,
Chris Murray, and on and on.
Darian Smith
He played when he was at Washington State?
Yeah.
I like the pass rush package that Auburn's putting out there right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
334-321-1390. We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Love to hear from you as we continue with the Monday Drive from Franklin Tire.
To email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here at Franklin Tire. Taking your calls, questions, comments. 334-321-1390. You love to hear your grade of Auburn's performance on Saturday or any of the team's performances. I mean,
here's the thing to keep in mind about Auburn's performance Saturday is that, it's Ball State, and, Ball State looked the way they did against Purdue. Ball State's not the only team Auburn's played this year. And the Baylor Bears.
No, how about Baylor? Coming back from a 2-touchdown deficit midway through the fourth quarter. Sawyer Robertson, I thought he had more yards.
That was a great game.
I swear, I looked up in the when it was 38-24, he had over 400 yards passing.
Yeah.
And he only finished with 440 as they went at 48-45 in overtime.
That's a nice
win.
That was
the game of the weekend, I think, for a lot of people who watched it.
Yeah, and some folks couldn't watch it. He was on the CW.
I couldn't watch it. Yeah,
and I think is USF Miami the CW game this week? I think that might be.
Wow.
Come on,
I think
man.
I think that might be right. And so you got some big ones all of a sudden.
Brian, I wasn't able to take advantage of the break. Did you try the break that somebody had on y'all's message board?
Oh, the YouTube TV thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't see it?
No.
Brian, you got to go
back
and check.
My YouTube TV worked for CW.
No, I know that, but one of your subscribers had a deal that apparently is available to certain certain YouTube TV folks. Did it work for you, Dan?
I share YouTube TV.
It didn't work for me.
I'm on the family plan.
It didn't work for me. But I mean, it was a deal where you could get
it for like
$30
a pretty good price.
Where you could get it $30 off for a couple of months, and there were all kinds of folks on the bunker that said it was working for them. Huh. Didn't work for me, and I wasn't able to watch the game because we don't have that CW on local YouTube.
I don't know
TV.
why we have it. Well, I have it, and you don't.
I don't know.
You have CW
on
yours?
That's what I'm saying. Maybe
do you get Montgomery stations?
I think that's what it is.
Is it Montgomery for school?
Yeah, he's listed Montgomery. I shouldn't say that publicly.
No, that's fine.
You can claim either one.
Bill has to do is drive across town, right? And then it'll start detecting you as part of like a.
I just need to go. I guess I could go in and tell him. No, I'm closer to Montgomery than I am Columbus.
You could pick your.
I can do that.
Pick your local TV, but the Baylor. Getting up off the mat, and now you look, and they've got that Arizona State game in a couple of weeks, and that doesn't seem as daunting as it did when the season started. And how about Jeff Lebby and the Cowbells, huh?
Yeah, about
big win for those guys.
That was a big win for the SEC, I thought, in them.
Yeah. No, you're not kidding. I mean, other than Florida, it was a pretty good weekend for the SEC, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, it was a really good weekend for the SEC.
And that's a state team that now has a chance to get to 4-0 with a couple of really manageable home games, Alcorn State, Northern Illinois, and then Tennessee is going to go to Starkville and face a 4-0 Mississippi State team.
Wow.
And I mean, I don't know. That doesn't sound like a fun trip for the Vols in between.
Now, if they had gotten Mississippi State like the week after Georgia, maybe I would have thought of it more as a trap.
Oh, that's something.
But
else.
But I mean, they get state. They've got UAB before they go to Starkville.
I think that I want to see, if I were anyone on that schedule soon, I would want to see state crash to earth before I was the team that necessarily played them. I mean, look, I mean, they still are the team that was picked to finish last in the SEC, and it's still going to be extremely tough for them in all four of their conference road games.
Who is your pick to finish last right now?
I think they're one of the safer bets on the board. I mean,
they still are, although
Kentucky would
Kentucky,
be my answer.
Okay, Kentucky, yeah.
Florida's got some work to do with the schedule they've got.
Boy, with that.
Although
State
goes to Gainesville. So State's got, I mean, I think State and Kentucky would probably be near
that. Florida maybe, I mean, I wonder who's coaching them by then. I mean, Florida may be looking for their first win since Long Island when Mississippi State comes in. Because, like we said about Florida, they're at LSU and Miami. Then they've got Texas at home and then at Texas A&M before State comes in. Florida could very well be 1-5 when Mississippi State comes to town.
No, but I think that's a cool win for a
better
state
start taking
team.
The stairs.
I mean, to lose the way State did last season.
Yep.
And you know, with a new coach.
Well, you know, they played Arizona State pretty tough last year.
Yeah, they did.
There.
Yeah, they did. And so I think to show that they've to show there's a little bit of life there, and you know, I just think that I mean, look, maybe Tennessee goes in there in a couple of weeks and steamrolls them, and it's business as usual for State once they start playing SEC teams. Maybe not.
Arkansas is another team that folks would say, you know, is a contender to be down there at the bottom. Although you said we'll see how things go for Lane and company when Ole Miss goes in there this weekend.
Another team with a Petrino on staff,
right?
Is it Paul?
Paul is the offensive coordinator at South.
Yeah, is Major Applewhite's
Trey
offensive
Williams
coordinator
is there. Yeah, Major Applewhite, of course.
Major took over. Kane Womack was the head coach for several years. Took over when Kane left to be Alabama's defensive coordinator.
Yeah, so there's some familiarity there, and you would think that South's offense would be pretty good. You would think.
Yeah, South had a bit of a struggle in the FCS game. That they played
and then they,
to
but
open
then
the season.
They played Tulane. They had an opportunity to send that game to overtime against Tulane.
Yeah, and Tulane, another team that plays Ole Miss pretty soon. That's I think the week after Saturday.
Next week, after Arkansas.
And that's a I think South Florida and Tulane look like your party crashers.
Yeah.
Right now
they look like the best G5 teams.
You know, so that's for South Florida to go punch for punch with Tulane, you know, they're pretty good or South Florida for South Alabama to go punch for punch with Tulane like they did on Saturday. Yeah, I would think that Auburn's got and it's always dangerous, Brian, when it's I don't want to generalize too much. South Alabama could have multiple players that thought they should have gotten SEC offers.
Well, maybe they will. Play well Saturday.
That's right.
Never know.
And it's Auburn get noticed.
Auburn has signed multiple players out of the Sun Belt
via
the portal, including Kieron Crawford these last couple of seasons. And you know, because they were impressive. Who was it? McLeod had that great game against A&M. And it was when App State went to A&M a couple years ago and really stuck a pin in the Jimbo Fisher experiment. And, you know, Jalen McLeod put himself on the map, you know, became an SEC player. I think that's the kind of opportunity that's there for all of these South Alabama players. And some of them, you know, are guys that may have ended up in a previous era getting signed by an SEC team out of high school. Yeah. But now it's tougher to bet on unproven high school prospects, and it's easier to go into the portal and get your proven guys. But that's the kind of edge. You know, it feels like when it's true in the Florida schools too. I mean, we just saw it with South Florida. But like when an FIU or an FAU or a USF gets, I mean, remember, there's the Miami FIU brawl, right? Like there's the fight. Yeah. Like sometimes these things can be more than meets the eye when it's a dangerous guy.
I'm calling the battle of the big cats.
Kudos
like
to Auburn. I like that. Kudos to Auburn.
Jaguars and Tigers?
Yeah.
I think it's cool that Auburn scheduled it.
We'll see
how I feel in a week.
That's right.
But right now, I think it's pretty
cool.
No,
I think it's great.
That Auburn scheduled this game.
I think it's
great. And they come in with their quarterback, Bishop Davenport, completing better than 75% of his passes for right at 200 yards a game. And they've got a running back who's averaging better than 100 yards a game on the ground through two games.
Yeah. And Freeze talked about their receivers are pretty good, and he talked about them having an athletic quarterback and them having a very tough defense to work against with all the movement. So this could be an interesting game. We'll see.
Well, it's one like Dan was saying a while ago. I mean, this is one. Let's see how the crowd and the atmosphere is for a morning game.
Right.
The week before you go on the road to Oklahoma. Yeah. This is one where
it
would be really, really easy to go, hey, let's just stay at home and watch this one and watch some of the other ball games, you know, and relax this weekend.
I think it really helps that Auburn doesn't have a home game next week.
Yeah, right? I think
you're
right.
The thought that Auburn's going to be on the road for a couple of weeks makes this game a little bit less skippable than it might otherwise seem. And the fact that it's homecoming, I think, maybe helps a little bit,
yeah,
too.
That's right.
But I would expect Auburn – look, atmosphere wasn't the problem last year. You know, I know folks.
No,
you know,
Auburn, that's right. Auburn, sure couldn't blame any losses on that.
No, that's what I mean. And while the atmosphere was great for when Auburn got to play at night or when the sun was going down, like even early in the season, right? Like Auburn had Arkansas and Oklahoma and Cal in the daytime, and the atmosphere was everything you would want.
They had
it to
all
be.
The chances, and it sure wasn't the crowd.
It sure wasn't
the crowd that let them
in.
Hey, Brian, how was it to be able to look straight ahead and see? See the big screen.
It was
there
nice.
At the north end.
Yeah, I mean, it made a difference. I thought, and I just thought overall the atmosphere in the stadium was really, really good.
It was. I was really impressed, and we'd forgotten what it's like to be able to see replays and things like that on that big screen. I will say again, I mentioned to you, Dad, it's really sad that some of the seats that are there, which are prime seats, can't see either scoreboard.
Because the awnings, right?
The awnings stick out far enough. Our six-season tickets are underneath the upper deck on the west side. And all we could see on that north end zone was the clock and the Tigers the bottom.
And I'm telling you, Brian, complaining about this on the air, they're just going to stop having those seats, right? They're just going to be like, all right, well now we got to get rid of seats that can't see either
Maybe
screen.
Maybe they just need bigger TVs in there so you get more of the
Well, I will say this, though. My wife said that for the first time that the monitors – that they have monitors on the underside, under the upper deck. She said they did mirror, even though there was a little delay, they at least mirrored. Because in the past, they had not done that. And we the family couldn't see the south end zone.
It was the closed circuit
feed. And had no idea.
Right? It was the closed circuit TV feed.
Yeah, just getting the closed circuit feed. But they have now some of them at least – that are monitoring that, so that's great.
That's
so, thank you very much to the folks over there in the athletic department that did that, because when you're spending that kind of money and don't have it,
it's
nice to be able to see what's on the big screen.
It's great when it rains, right?
Oh, fabulous!
I will offer gentle criticism. All right, because I think for the most part it was fantastic.
Yeah,
I will say. The Pat Dye field text.
We both talked about this. It would be better if the text for Pat Dye Field were not just white.
If it matched either the AU logo font or the end zone.
It would stand out
font.
Better if it were orange or blue or both.
I think something or even block text with something on
because
the
because it's sort of it's a very light and you almost can't see. You notice the sponsor, which is fine, and I'm sure Jimmy Rain wouldn't mind if Pat Dye Field
were in
blue with orange trim the way the logo is.
Yeah, and it does look like the numbers and the hash marks and stuff, but I think it needs to stand out. I think something that would help it pop a little bit more is not a bad idea. I also the left side of the new Jumbotron.
Well, some of
the
things
same,
that they've got on either side are a little difficult.
The one on the left side, though, showed the same, like, six Auburn football historical facts over the entire game, and that
took me a while to find yards to go.
First and what? Yeah. Why not make that bigger?
I don't know. It was tough. I needed my binoculars.
That's number one. Okay, you're absolutely right. Number one. Down in distance, and I'd say
those are critical.
And
I have to know that.
That is entirely too small.
I need the ball on and and that, down in distance.
And I understand that there are a lot of advertising commitments that have been made.
Fine, and I'm all for those.
But the down and distance is way too small on the new thing. It needs to be.
I got one more for doing little criticisms.
So I would say, you know, and streamline, and
it was game one.
Yeah, I love celebrating some of the Auburn history stuff.
Absolutely.
And finding a way to do that. I would maybe that can take over when the game isn't actually between plays.
All right, what's yours,
I don't
Brian?
Know if anybody noticed this, good or bad, but I was told by a person there that I know quite well that I guess with the lasers and the AU, it didn't show up the way it was supposed to show up or the way they advertised it to be or something.
I didn't notice an AU. I just noticed.
I don't know. This is just coming from.
With the lasers?
Yeah.
I thought the laser show at the end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth, looked pretty cool from our spot.
Okay.
I don't know. I didn't notice any technical snafus there.
Like I said, this is not coming from me. This is coming from
the source. They seem very proud of the so, you know, it is funny that some of the answers I was getting from Media Days, where it's like, boy, we're in a lot of Turner Stadium stuff, and it's like some of these answers are in there in the video, including – Kirby being kind of curt with us about talking about Jordan Hare, but then the Nick Saban haunted thing, which has taken on a life of its own, and now you have Nick Saban saying the place is haunted in the Jumbotron,
and Kirby from 2024, that was like 15 months ago.
I think Kirby had another answer like this summer though about talking up Jordan Hare Stadium and hyping it up at the over a year ago?
From SEC Media Days was 2024 because I went back and looked.
Because he got another one this year about Jordan Hare talking about it too.
Yeah, so no wonder he's short with it. He's tired of it.
Yeah.
And he's short anyway. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in, 334-321-1390. Hey, don't forget, we've got to get to Brian's Monday Musings as well in the final half hour of the Monday Drive from Franklin Tire. Sports.com. B-Matt, Auburn not with a lot of opportunities to get recruits on campus here early. They did Saturday. What's your feeling about how things went? Recruiting-wise?
It sounds like it went really, really well. I mean, Auburn had some really good players in. The Wells brothers.
A lot of players committed elsewhere, about a dozen or so that were committed elsewhere.
Corey is committed to Texas. His younger brother committed to South Alabama.
Chris.
Corey's a big nose guard. And I think right now, coming after that visit, I know Jeffrey Lee, our top recruiting guy, believes both those guys are close to flipping to Auburn. So I think it went really well with both those guys, and certainly guys to keep a close eye on. And then the cornerback who's committed to Stanford, I believe he was here too. And I think
down in the Mobile area.
Yeah. And I think he had a really, really good visit. And I think Auburn's in great shape for him also.
Yeah, you would think. And again, I mean, the Georgia game's going to be huge. As far as recruiting, but you know, you want to go ahead and get some folks in, especially after that win over Baylor, get them in. And I think that was a great time on Saturday with the atmosphere that we had with everything going on. I mean, I don't think you could have asked for a better situation because there weren't a lot of huge games around the country. Auburn was a good spot for a lot of top recruits to come in.
Laziah, I think, is Jackson was the kid from he's a four-star that's committed to Stanford at the moment. He's going to be back the weekend at Georgia for an official visit. So that's big. And then Jared Dowdy, a big offensive tackle. He's about 6'7", 270, decommitted from Georgia State. Now, it's not just Auburn that offered him. I think Georgia, Missouri also offered him recently. So he's going to visit all those schools. But he was here, and I think he had a really good time. And he'll be back for an official visit at some point too. So it was a good weekend, I think, for Auburn get Shedarius Tootle was another guy that came in.
Yeah, former Auburn now
Georgia commit, and I think he's a guy that let's wait until we get real close to signing day in December and see what.
Wait until ink's on paper, maybe after bouncing around a couple of times.
Well, that's the thing with these kids. You do not want to. Well, for Auburn, some of them you don't want to get into a deal. Well, we can offer you this, and then, okay, well, the school will offer you this, and then, we'll come back and counter and match. Just wait until we get to the final few days and then see if we want to make a move, and if we do, let's make the big move and let's get it done.
Yeah, I mean, still thinking a smaller signing class than usual?
I'm still not sure exactly how it's going to work out, but
what do you think? What do you think about the NCAA's proposal now? It looks like we're going to the single transfer portal in January.
Honestly, and I hate to say this because I think people won't like to hear this, but I think it's much ado about nothing. You know, you look at what happened last year. You had two guys make a move outside the portal window, and they could not stop it. So I just think it's a matter of time before somebody, you know, challenge that in a court of law, and they win, and the NCAA / whatever group's in charge lose again, and then it's the Wild Wild West again.
I just wonder if all the schools, though, agree to that, to play by those rules. Yeah. I don't see how players are going to be able to win there. I think that's the thing to keep in mind, that if you've got solidarity of all the members, and the members say, we're going to play by these rules, that I don't know that a court can then say, well, that rule's
then
not.
Then your quarterback turns his knee in the spring, you have to have one, and then.
It is odd. Look at the players Auburn added after spring.
Right.
I've always been sort of curious about the legality of the current portal windows, right? But, I mean, if everybody agrees
they've already had a couple of guys go outside those windows, and they couldn't stop it.
Sure.
So it's already a proven fact that those don't actually have any – legal binding.
Although in the case of the Rutgers guy, you had a situation where it was the Miami player.
One guy went to Miami.
The Miami player had told his team, "I want to go in the portal," and they told him no.
Yeah.
Which teams cannot
do. No.
Think they have multi-year deals with players, if a player says, "I want to go in the portal" during a portal window, you can't tell him no.
What you should have is some recourse from that player to be able to do that. That would be just fine.
Absolutely. But I think if they can get, we said before, Brian, the dream would be you crown a national champion early enough that you can have a week or 2 week portal window in January,
right,
truly after the season is over. But because of the calendar now,
there's still going to be games being played when players are going in the portal.
So then the dream would be
– or the season is well over and it's after spring.
Can you limit it to just maybe the top four teams are the only ones still playing and everyone else, you know, has their season over or something like that? But I do think – look, the notion of a spring window is insane. Like, it just quite simply, like the thought that you put your whole team together and then anyone in – you know, anyone who wants to go in the portal can reopen the bidding after, you know, in April.
Yeah.
Like, how do you build a team that way?
You go through the spring, you work your way up the depth chart, and all of a sudden, hey, you've got bids coming in, and you go wherever.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why coaches don't, like, now I can understand why coaches want to be able to recruit in April versus December or January, especially in some cold weather parts of the country. Like, you'd rather have that portal in a time when your campus
looks
beautiful.
Coaches want a lot of things, but they're just not going to get them.
Exactly.
And, you know, the thing about the calendar in spring now, if you do what Ufreeze wants to do, and instead of having spring practice, you have the summer, what do you call them?
The June, you do the OTAs?
Yeah, the OTAs, thank you. Whenever you can, and I think Ufreeze would be open to doing that whenever you want to. If you want to do them in February, March, do it.
Extra 2 weeks of preseason in exchange for the getting rid of the spring, or is it
or just do it whenever you want to do it?
And
I think Ufreeze and a lot of coaches see it as you have these injuries at the end of the year, you have to have your surgeries, they're not ready to go in February, March, April. Why not have these OTAs in June when they are ready to go? And that's when your full team gets together, and that's when you start preparing for the season, sort of like they do in the NFL, and the rest of the time you're just doing the training and everything else you can do.
Assembling your roster
right
up till then.
Right.
I mean, it would be great if you when you did preparation at whatever time you wanted to do it, you knew these are the players you're going to have.
Right, right. So I mean, that kind of eliminates everybody getting so upset about the spring transfers.
Now spring portal window is incredibly important for Hugh Freeze that first year because he showed up either during or after.
Oh, yeah.
The first portal window, and that to me would be like, you better have your coaching stuff, you better have those ducks in a row before
make your coaching moves as soon as you can before the first of the year.
Because usually these things are ironed out before the end of December, but you better not. I mean, the calendar before was really opening the portal after the last week of the regular season, right?
Yeah.
Or opening it when you reveal the playoff, like. Yeah. That was really putting some teams in tough spots because you had coaching searches that were ongoing.
You did, and you had plenty.
Signing day, coaching searches.
You had
players
saying, "Nah, that's it. I'm going to the portal. I'm not going to play in the bowl game." You had a team. Who was the team? Who was the team that?
That didn't play in their bowl game because it was Marshall. Didn't Marshall?
Just said we don't have enough players.
Because the whole team,
everybody's going to portal.
The whole team went to Southern Miss with the coach. Yeah. Like the Marshall hired Southern Miss hired Marshall's coach, and he brought like a lot of the starters with him to Southern Miss. And no, that's, I mean, yeah, I think that the thought of having to navigate that in December, and then opening the portal window in January is probably the right move, even if you'll have some back channel. I think some guys will know where they're going.
This new proposal, there's going to be an awful lot of talk with some people and players before January 2nd when that portal is supposed to open. All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. We've got to hear Brian's Monday musings and still have time for your calls if you'd like to get through 334-321-1390 as we wind things down on the Monday Drive for Franklin Tire.
AU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
But it's my left leg. So. Welcome back in. Final segment of the Monday edition of the drive. Got just about 5 or 6 minutes. So we've got to get Brian's Monday musings in, which you'll find every week there at AuburnSports.com.
You will, and this one's easy. It's like, you know, throwing a fastball right down the middle at about 75 miles per hour.
All right.
We're going back 90 years to the
90
day.
90 years.
90 years.
Day, the legend, 1935.
Yep, legendary chairman of the board made his radio debut.
Okay, we got it. Right, so we know
Frank?
Yeah.
Okay.
All blue eyes.
Yep, that's right.
All right, what else happened? I got Frank trivia for you. Ready?
Okay.
What else happened the day Frank died?
This was 1998. May of 98, because I just wrote it, I think.
I believe Frank Sinatra.
May 14th, 1998.
I believe Frank Sinatra passed away on the day the final Seinfeld aired. I believe it was the same day of the final episode of Seinfeld, and so it sort of shared coverage.
Can y'all
like
name
NBC,
how?
NBC would have cut away to – I think NBC would have done Sinatra coverage all night.
I'm sure they would
I think
have.
Some of the other networks did, but instead it was – you know, they had commitments to air the final – you know, they had a two-hour block that they'd sold years in advance for the final episode.
Do you know how New York honors him? They honor him on the day of his death and then his birthday every year. You know how they do that?
They play Start Spreading the News?
No.
What do they do?
Empire State Building in blue.
Oh, that's lovely. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I know the Yankees still play.
That's their closing
they
song.
They still play, which is from, you know, people think that song's real old. And it's from the –
1980.
It's from the musical. It's from New York, New York. It's from the – with Liza and
– Yep, you're right. May 14th, 1998 is the final episode of it.
Same day as – and it's – and they and I believe that, you know, it was originally a Liza Minnelli song, and then Sinatra covered it for an album in the 80s, and it's been a Yankees anthem ever since.
I got the video on there. It's amazing how good his voice sounds in his 60s and 70s.
Oh, yeah.
It is unbelievable.
Oh, even in the 1980s and
1990s. Oh, yeah. No kidding, man. I mean, just smooth.
Yeah, that's at his age. Yes, at his age. Yes, yeah.
Yep, that great stuff. So what was the
Tony Bennett could still go really late into
He did.
In the life as well, yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
I wrote about something we've talked about a lot today, and that was the atmosphere at Jordan-Hare and how special Auburn is, because I just don't think a lot of schools out there, coming off four consecutive losing seasons, going up against a team that's a 30-40 point underdog, would have an atmosphere like that.
No,
that
I
just
think
would
you're
not
right.
happen.
I think you're right. There were a lot of it's funny. It catches some people by surprise.
Yeah.
It's like the folks that were thinking, well, Auburn may only have about 1,000 folks there at the Baylor game in Waco. No,
it's closer to 10,000.
Yeah, that's what Andy was saying. He was thinking it was, you know, maybe a quarter of the stadium. And then they come home, and it is packed. I mean, it was packed.
It was packed Thursday. Like, it was
– There were – I mean, I was looking
Tiger
for
Walk
areas
was
of empty seats, and there weren't any.
And Auburn has done a great job turning the start of the fourth quarter into such an event that
you got to stick around.
You don't have the filtering out that you did, I think. And we'll see what it looks like Saturday.
I'd say the filtering out happened about maybe 10 or 12 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
It was the Durrell touchdown.
That's exactly right. When it made it 42-3.
Yeah, the Durrell touchdown.
Which is completely understandable. Oh, yeah. If I've got to get home, it's getting late. Yeah.
And folks still got to see a little Deuce. You know, see a little Deuce Knight.
Yeah, what'd you think? What'd you think, Brian?
I just think
he looked like a freshman.
Right. It was good to get his first college game experience. Yep. And he's out there with second team and third team or so. It was kind of a mess altogether. It wasn't just Deuce, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, those are guys he's been working with.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just thinking, you know, you felt, you know, they were a little nervous. I think Hugh Freeze was a little surprised that things didn't go a little better for him. But, I mean, look, he's going to have those butterflies, those nerves, the first time out there, you know, in college. And it's good that he was able to get those plays in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hopefully he's able to get back out there this week and get a little more and have some
maybe
more success.
Maybe have a chance to have a touchdown drive or something, put something together.
I know people were searching for stuff to talk about, and I know some of this was Hugh Freeze's own fault because he was so effusive with the praise, right, for Deuce and for Ashton in the preseason. But doesn't it seem sort of quaint? Like a couple of weeks ago, it was like,
people were like, is he going to play three quarterbacks?
What percentage of the snaps is Jackson going to play on Saturday? And how much of it's
going to – What downs?
No, it like, no. Yeah. It's, Auburn's got a quarterback.
It's just like –
Auburn's got one quarterback they play. Yeah. Like
nothing
he's
crazy.
No.
Nobody cares about the play calling, at least right now anymore.
Yeah, not yet.
Yeah. No. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll just, you know, have a game where they don't work.
And that game Auburn plays, if chalk holds Saturday, that game Auburn plays in Norman could be one of the biggest Auburn games in years.
Oh, you're right.
I mean, both
because
teams.
Because you win that one, and you know what? You're back. You are back. If you win that one to go 4-0 and you have beaten
and you're
a you know, highly ranked
right team on the road.
And you're pretty close to the top 10 if you're not there, I think. I mean, I think you're knocking on the door at 20. After this one, Oklahoma's probably knocking on the door at 10. You go to Norman and win, you're 12 or better would be my guess.
And you should be.
And the secret's out at that point with A&M and Georgia right out. That's what you could have. That's what you could have if things line up.
Great stuff, Brian. It's always great to have you. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you guys are doing.
Yeah, we've had blowout coverage of the game and recruiting. So many great updates there. Check us out, auburnsports.com. Follow me on Twitter/X at BMATAU.
All right, that is going to wrap things up for the Monday drive again. We've had a great time here at Franklin Tire. Anytime you need anything, see it about with your vehicle. Stop on in. They'll take care of it.
We still remember where the studio is, right?
We've been gone for a few days.
Several days in a row.
We'll be back in studio tomorrow. Andy Burchett, voice of the Auburn Tigers, joins us. Hey, don't forget, speaking of Andy, Tiger Talk is up next over on Wings 94.3. That's going to wrap things up for the Monday edition of The Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.